Welcome to Audio Journal's reading of Yankee Magazine. You'll hear stories about the people and places that make New England special. Mountains, farmland, salty sea coasts, history, sports teams, universities, cultural attractions, food, and more. I'm Mike Krasner, and today I will be reading from the March-April 2024 issue of Yankee Magazine and some New England Today articles. Thank you for joining me. Our first story is Flower Power. The Hafsa Lewis touch can be seen everywhere on Nantucket. She wants others to bring the beauty home. By Meg Lukens Noonan. There's a saying, all flowers must grow through dirt. Floral designer Hafsa Lewis tells me over lunch on a sparkling late spring Nantucket day. The first time I heard it, it just slapped me in the face. It's easy to see why that expression hit home when you learn how Lewis found her way to floristry and to a rebirth of sorts on this Massachusetts island. A series of traumatizing experiences beginning about a decade ago had left her reeling. First, she was near the Boston Marathon finish line in 2013 when the bombs went off, and she went to the aid of a gravely injured woman. 2 years later, she lost her savings in a Ponzi scheme, and then in 2017, her husband abruptly left her. Devastated, she quit her job at a Boston hospital, abandoned her plan to become a mental health counselor. She holds a master's degree in clinical psychology and moved to Nantucket to take a bartending gig. It was a dark, dark time in my life. I lost 30 pounds. I had no confidence, she says. The only time I didn't feel like I wanted to die was when I was surfing or playing with flowers. Lewis has enjoyed dabbling in floristry as a freelancer for an event planner. But now flowers felt like her salvation, a way to lose herself in beauty when things felt so bleak. They also presented a path forward. In 2018, she launched Hafsa and Company as a floral marketing company specializing in the kind of large-scale fresh and faux installations that businesses increasingly use to beautify their spaces, attract customers, and generate social media hits. After attending workshops in her native England as well as in Ecuador and Mexico to learn the mechanics of the displays, hint, it's all about chicken wire and zip ties, she started building her portfolio. Among Hafsa and Company's most enthusiastic clients is Lemon Press, the airy organic cafe where we've met for lunch. It's owned by cousins Daria Afshari Galt and Rachel Afshari, who happen to share Lewis's Persian heritage and her belief in the magic of flowers. Our first install with Hafsa was a small piece over the coffee bar, says Galt. It was so well received, people would come in just to Instagram it. We said, wow, let's keep going. Now, the Hafsa and Company touch is everywhere at the cafe. An ethereal 16-foot swag of preserved white blooms hanging Amaranthus, Lunaria, Helico Fern, and others graces a brick wall in the dining area. A canopy of faux wisteria dangles over the bar, and a border of foraged grapevines and silk daffodils and forsythias frames the eatery's exterior doorway. Lewis would soon be shifting that seasonal entrance display to summery spray roses and ranunculus. Lewis also has flowered the Artists Association of Nantucket Gallery, the Nantucket Hotel, the Nantucket Dreamland Movie Theater, and a host of boutiques both on and off the island. She's done displays for annual events, including the Nantucket Wine and Food Festival, the Christmas Stroll, and the Daffodil Festival. Made custom pieces for private parties, floral crowns anyone, and presented workshops for aspiring florists. In 2021, the noted Los Angeles-based fine art photographer Gray Mallon enlisted Lewis to create elaborate floral props for a series of vignettes he'd come to the island to shoot. That same year, and again in 2022, the local Coast Guard station asked her to put her creative touch on the iconic seasonal wreaths, daffodils in spring and poinsettias at Christmas time, that it hangs on the Brant Point Lighthouse. Lewis wasn't involved with the 2023 daffodil wreath, which was delayed by lighthouse renovations, and then made and hung at the last minute by the Coast Guard when repairs were complete. Like most small business owners, she's faced challenges. When COVID hit, she stayed afloat by making and delivering $50 bouquets with inspirational messages to residents who were stuck at home. Then in 2022, Nantucket's Sign Advisory Council questioned whether her temporary outdoor installations were technically signs and therefore subject to a permitting process, a red tape-heavy requirement that likely would have sunk her business. Some detractors also sniffed that her displays were not appropriate on Nantucket. Lewis went to every council meeting for 6 weeks to argue that her pieces were not signs, and that they were no different from the flower boxes most shops maintain. I also wanted them to know the reason they were seeing more installations is because our community wants them. They make people happy. The controversy ended when the town unexpectedly ordered the council to disband before it made any recommendations. And I'm still here to flower another day, she says, smiling broadly. Through it all, Lewis has remained mindful of what drew her to flowers, their power to heal, to express joy and sorrow, and to forge connections. The science part of my brain, she says, is really interested in how therapeutic flowers can be. So interested, in fact, that she's starting a doctorate program in clinical psychology this year with the idea of one day using flowers in a counseling practice. We have art therapy and pet therapy, she says. Why not flower therapy? There's a bit more to the tale of how Hafsa Lewis blossomed on Nantucket. Those coasties she helped with the lighthouse wreaths, last summer she married one of them. It was such a meet-cute, she says. My friends tell me my life should be a Hallmark movie. We continue now with a sidebar. DIY floral design. Granted, you're probably not planning to erect an elaborate floral installation in your home, but Hafsa Lewis says the principles behind her big stuff apply to the simplest arrangements, too. Picking your flowers. Go with the ones that make you feel something, she says, whether it's a $24 stem or a sad-looking Charlie Brown-type grocery store flower. If you're moved enough by something that nature's created and it sparks joy inside of you, then you should take it home and make it your own. Choosing your vessel. Pick one that allows your flowers space to breathe. If they're stuck in a vase that just stands them straight up, they can feel stiff. That's not how they are in nature. They grow loose and wild and free. Let each flower have its moment. It doesn't matter if it's the side or the back or the front of the stem. Flowers are beautiful from all angles. Setting up for success. First, make sure your vessel is clean. Remove any leaves from the stem that would be under the waterline. Since submerged leaves can cause bacteria that will shorten the flower's shelf life. Give the stems a fresh cut before you put them in water. Taking your time, I often walk away from a piece for a while so I can come back to it with fresh eyes. And I take pictures in order to get a different perspective. That helps me see what's missing and what I could do differently. I think that works for both large and small-scale things. Honing your skills. Lewis recommends photographing one arrangement you do now and one you do in 6 months, then studying the pictures to see what you've done differently and what has stuck with you. Did the shape change? Did you pick different colors? Once you start to pay more attention, you learn what you like and what is most meaningful to you. Now we check in on Best New England Rail Trails, written by Ian Aldrich for New England Today. Take to the landscape on two wheels and enjoy the great outdoors like never before with our list of the best New England rail trails. A century ago, New England's landscape was crisscrossed by an assortment of railroad lines. Today, train travel has a much smaller presence in the region, but thanks to the efforts of some passionate outdoor groups, many of the disused rail routes have been reborn as cycling paths. Our six states offer up a rich collection of routes that provide riders with mountain views and wind past rivers, lakes, and even the ocean. Ready to ride? Then read on for our collection of some of the best New England rail trails. First, Vermont Rail Trails, Island Line Trail, Burlington to South Hero, distance 14 miles. The Island Line Trail serves up stunning views of both Lake Champlain and the Adirondacks, with sailboats, lighthouses, and killer sunsets only adding to the scenic appeal. A combination of pavement and packed gravel, this route comprises the Burlington Bike Path, the Colchester Causeway, and the Allen Point Access Area Trail. Your Instagram moment will take place on the causeway, a 3-mile stretch flanked by huge marble boulders that extends into Lake Champlain. Note, there's a 200-foot gap in the causeway between Colchester and South Hero, but in warm weather, bikers can catch a lift on the seasonal ferry operated by Burlington bike outfitter Local Motion. Montpelier and Wales River Rail Trail, Groton to Marshfield, distance 19 miles. For nearly a century, this rail route was an essential link between central Vermont and the Connecticut River Valley, with granite, lumber, mail, milk, and livestock, all making the journey. Today, two-wheeled riders have dominion over the route, which includes some wonderfully scenic dirt and cinder stretches through what can feel like an untamed landscape. When the sun hangs high, cool off at Lake Groton, and if you've got it in you, make the ride part of a longer journey on the Cross Vermont Trail. New Hampshire Rail Trails. Presidential Rail Trail from Gorham to Whitefield, distance 18 miles. You don't actually have to scale huge peaks to take in the breathtaking beauty of the White Mountains Presidential Range. The elevated landscape comes into full focus on this route, along with an array of beaver ponds, pastures, and key birding spots. The ruins of an old bottling factory that sits just off the trail outside Gorham is an intriguing find. If you're in need of a break, Israel River Campground in Jefferson is ready with pick-me-ups. Water, chocolate, and wonderfully cheap cold beer, if you're into that sort of thing. Because this popular route is also a part of the 83-mile Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail, you can extend the ride to explore all of the Northern Whites. Northern Rail Trail from Lebanon to Boscawen. Distance 59.3 miles. Several years ago, this beloved bike route was named by the national nonprofit Rails to Trails Conservancy to its 100 top trails in the U.S. list, and for good reason. The longest rail trail in the state, and still growing thanks to its devoted volunteers, the Northern Rail Trail glides past farms, orchards, lakes, mill sites, and covered bridges, with possible moose sightings in Grafton and Orange. Named a 2015 Yankee Editor's pick for best bike trail. Massachusetts Rail Trails, Cape Cod Rail Trail, South Dennis to South Wellfleet, distance 22 miles. The Cape offers several stunning cycling opportunities, including the Shining Sea Bikeway, a nearly 11-mile path through Falmouth. But the real star of the region is the Cape Cod Rail Trail, extending from the Mid-Cape to LeConte Hollow Road near the famed P.B. Boulanger Bistro in Wellfleet. This paved path features a few gentle hills and, most important, several access points to Cape Cod National Seashore beaches. Pets on short leashes are permitted on the trail, so Fido can run alongside. Bike rentals are also available at various bike shops located on the trail in Yarmouth, Dennis, Brewster, Orleans, and Wellfleet. Named a 2016 Yankee Editor's pick for best tourist hotspot. Asherwill-Teacook Rail Trail from Cheshire to Adams. Distance 12.7 miles. This Berkshire's ride serves up several too-good-to-pass-up photo ops as you ride through the Hoosick River Valley with big views of Mount Greylock and the Hoosick Mountains. Other worthy stopping points include the Cheshire Reservoir and the Hoosick River. Flexibility bonus. Parking lots and restrooms are available along the route. Main Rail Trails, Eastern Trail, South Portland to Kennebunk, distance 22 miles. Rail trail riding in Maine often includes hopping on a portion of the East Coast Greenway, a wickedly ambitious 3,000-mile trek that extends from Calais down the entire eastern seaboard to Key West, Florida. That's 15 states and 450 towns and cities. If you don't have the time to pull off that kind of adventure, you can get a nice taste by bringing your bike to the off-road portion of the Eastern Trail, which provides a flat, easy ride on asphalt and crushed stone. Blueberry Barrens, the Rachel Carson National Wildlife Refuge, Scarborough Marsh, and Bug Light Park, and its Portland Breakwater Lighthouse all play key roles on this route. For the full 65-mile Eastern Trail experience, switch to the on-road portion and continue on to Kittery. Kennebec River Rail Trail, from Augusta to Gardiner. Distance, 6.5 miles. This relatively flat ride runs alongside a section of rail line that was once the backbone of the Portland to Augusta train route. The tracks are still maintained in hopes the train will run once again. The entire trail is paved and offers four convenient access points, three in Farmingdale and one in Halliwell. Connecticut Rail Trails now. Airline State Park Trail, Portland to Thompson. Distance, 50 miles. Jog, walk, or pedal any or all of this flat, easy gravel trail that cuts a diagonal through northeastern Connecticut, and you'll marvel at the same scenes that enchanted the well-heeled passengers of the late 19th century ghost train. Those gold-trimmed, white-painted Pullman cars have vanished. But this portion of the so-called airline that ran from New York to Boston has been reincarnated as a public path over viaducts and bridges, through wetlands and farmlands and forest preserves. Named a 2016 Yankee Editor's pick for Best Rail Trail. Rhode Island Rail Trails, East Bay Bike Path, from Providence to Bristol. Distance, 14.5 miles. The sights, sounds, and scents of Narragansett Bay accompany your walk or ride along this shoreside path from Providence's India Point Park to Independence Park in Bristol. Possible stops include the Crescent Park Carousel in East Providence, the Audubon Center and Aquarium in Bristol, and the Dells Frozen Lemonade Stand at Colt State Park. Named a 2015 Yankee Editor's pick for Best Rail Trail. Do you have any favorite New England rail trails? Let us know in the comments below. This post was first published in 2020 and has been updated, says Ian Aldrich. Now let's visit home and away, spanning cultures and continents. Maine photographer Greta Ribas finds the threads that tie us all together. By Mel Allen, Yankee Magazine's editor. When talking about a photographer, we often refer to their eye as if what is seen through their lens explains what emerges for us as viewers. And the photos you see here certainly reflect the keen and restless eye of Greta Ribas, whose work has often appeared in Yankee as well as in many other publications. And with her brand new book, Hot Springs, 10-Speed Press, her eye takes readers on a world tour of 14 countries. Hot Springs have helped shape the culture of those places. What does that look like, she says. But to understand the depth of Ribas's work, you need to know as much about her heart as her eye, and how she is inspired to show how people care for their places and each other. Raised in the Mountain West with stints overseas, Ribas came to Maine after college to intern for a Portland photo agency, the only work offer she had received. I fell for Maine, how its landscape could be both harsh and nourishing, says Ribas, who still lives in Portland today. As a freelance photojournalist, she carries versions of the same cameras she used in college. I want to think about equipment as little as possible, she says. I want to think about the experience. And the breadth of her experiences is vast, from immersing herself in the world of wild sheep and the Mainers who care for them, to capturing the haunting moments of a home in Senegal, being washed into the sea, an event, she says, that changed her life and spurred her desire to show climate change not as an abstract concept, but as a burning reality. To make her delicately beautiful landscapes and portraits, she strives to find intimacy and empathy with her subjects. I'm asking people to be vulnerable to what she calls an interview with my camera, she says. What she learns with her heart shows up in her eye, and we feel them both. Again, that's from Mel Allen. To see more of Greta Ribas's work, including a preview of her new book, Hot Springs, go to Greta Ribas, that's R-Y-B-U-S, .com. Left. 3 miles off the main coast is a trio of mostly barren islands, Little Nash, Big Nash, and Flat, inhabited only by wild sheep, the descendants of a flock first raised by a lighthouse keeper's daughter on Little Nash in 1916. The islands and the people who carefully and respectfully tend to the flock have become great inspirations to me, says Ribas, who has made this place the focus of an ongoing multi-year project. They're by far the thing I love documenting most in this world. Opposite, in Senegal, a man looks through a door that just hours before had led to his family's bedroom. The back of the house had washed away. The powerful image is part of Ribas's Climate Stories project, during which she interviewed and photographed local people around the globe to discover how climate change affected their everyday lives. Previous spread. Ever since Ribas moved to Maine in 2011, she's found endless inspiration in its rugged and beautiful landscape. In this image, taken on assignment for the state's tourism office, she shows what Camden Harbor's iconic Curtis Island lighthouse looks like from inside a lobster boat's pilot house. Above. A skiff is essential transportation for artist Beau Bartlett, who spends summers with his wife and fellow artist Betsy Ebby on Wheaton Island, a 20-acre outcropping of Maine's famously remote Matinicus Isle. In Maine, Ribas says, I can document a world that feels human scale. Enjoying food raised by neighbors, objects made by local artists, getting to important places by rowboat. Opposite. In this image from Ribas's Valley Eulogy, a project that speaks to her own family's history in the American West, cowboys prepare for a roping event at the annual rodeo in Ennis, Montana. I've thought a lot about how Maine reminds me of Montana. Both places have a deep connection to the natural landscape and feel protective of that connection. It's behind my impulse to photograph fishing, farming, homesteading, and ranching. Left. One of Ribas's favorite images from her new book, Hot Springs, is this portrait of a construction worker building a new road in Pamukkale, Turkey, to make the historical sites around a thermal complex more accessible. It's common while working on projects that I'm initially introduced to members of upper management to learn about a place, but the most meaningful connections will usually be found among the workers, she says. Opposite, though she spends much of her time immersing herself in the lives of other people, Ribas often looks at her personal world through the camera, too. Each year, my partner and I carve out a little time to go somewhere beautiful in the summertime. We try to get off the grid, somewhere without internet or electricity. One year, we visited this tiny cabin on Maine's Scudic Peninsula, where we could hear the ocean while we slept. Taken for an Atlas Obscura article titled The Lost Art of Growing Blueberries with Fire, this image remains one of my favorite things I've ever photographed, Ribas says. It shows Nicholas Lindholm, owner of Blue Hill Berry Company in Penobscot, Maine, practicing the centuries-old indigenous tradition of burning wild blueberry barrens by hand to facilitate crop growth. While many of Lindholm's fellow growers rely on mechanized burns, he sets out with a drip torch each spring to burn the hay that he spread across the barrens months before. Helping to control the burn is a crew of family and friends armed with backpack water sprayers. For Lindholm, it's one way to improve his odds in the chancy business of growing wild blueberries. We're dealing with a perennial crop in its native homeland, he told Atlas Obscura. There's so many things that are out of your control. You gotta have a strong heart and be somewhat of a gambler. Below. During the 2 years Ribas spent capturing images for Hot Springs, she visited thermal waters that ranged from simple, silty pools in the landscape to architectural marbles like the Gellert Spa in Budapest. All the time, I was struck by the way nature provides for us and all the ways we use hot water for adventure, community, collectivity, and connection. Opposite. While on assignment for travel and leisure, Libus caught the light of serene happiness in the eyes of a girl who'd just been swimming in a cove on Deer Isle, Maine. Though Ribas was trained in photojournalism courses to document society's problems and challenges, and often suffering and corruption, she says she's most interested in finding images of joy, reciprocity, community, and connection. There's as much to be learned from joy as there is from pain, she says. Now to learn from New England today. Best lakeside lodging in New England. That would be in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire. Learn our picks for best lakeside lodging in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire from Yankee's annual Best of New England Editor's Choice Awards. When the temperature rises, New Englanders flock to their region's many lakes to cool off and beat the heat. why not turn your visit into a longer stay by checking in at a lakeside inn, lodge, resort, or even your very own houseboat. Check out our picks for the best lakeside lodging in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire from Yankee's annual Best of New England Editor's Choice Awards. Then, head for the water. Best lakeside lodging in Maine, Sebago Lake State Park, Casco. It's surprising that with a depth of 316 feet and a service area of more than 45 square miles, Sebago Lake doesn't have its own mythical sea monster. What it does have, though, are resident populations of landlocked salmon and lake trout, more than 100 miles of shoreline, and this 1,400-acre campground, now in its ninth decade, revered by the families who return year after year to the 250 wooded sites set back from the water. Hiking trails crisscross the surrounding woods, but most campers come to swim and bask in the piney surroundings. Kewanee Inn in Weld. The woodsy environs around mountain-ringed Webb Lake leave no doubt as to why Maine calls itself the Pine Tree State. The forest supplied the timber to build the inn and accompanying cabins as staff housing for a nearby summer boys' camp. Now the log and shingle structures, pine-paneled rooms, and massive stone fireplaces bring the mountain lake summer camp experience to all. Staffers provide trail maps for hiking Mount Blue and Tumble Down Mountain, where a technical rock climbing trail is one option for the ascent. There are no classes in weaving gimp lanyards anymore, but the inn does loan canoes and kayaks. Migas Lodge in Casco. Set under towering pines on the shores of Sebago Lake, this 100-year-old resort turns the lakeside family vacation into a luxury experience, pampering guests with wood-burning fireplaces, stocked daily, and fancy linens in 35 well-appointed cottages and a main lodge. Choose from paddling, sailing, tennis, kids' programs, and a slew of family-friendly activities, from island cookouts to water skiing sessions. Meals and most activities are included. Addian Lake Lodge in Jackman. Addian has been welcoming guests to Birch Island, an oasis of hospitality in the wilderness, since the late 19th century. Guests stay in comfy cabins, enjoy meals in the main lodge, and spend their days swimming, paddling, hiking, and fishing. Best lakeside lodging now in Vermont. Brighton State Park, Island Pond. Deep in the craggy Northeast Kingdom, scrub oak and native blueberry bushes hem in the edges of Brighton State Park's Spectacle Pond. On the pond's western shore, 54 tent sites, 23 lean-tos, and 5 rental cabins play host to overnight visitors. Seeking extra serenity or easy lakefront access, hit the high-numbered sites in the park's northern loop, where the peace and quiet are interrupted only by the loon's trill. Tyler Place Family Resort, Highgate Springs. This all-inclusive resort, near the top of Lake Champlain, offers water sports for bigger kids and adults, story time and age-appropriate play for toddlers, and everything needing to accommodate infants. And when you're ready for a vacation from the kids, book a staff sitter and mingle with other grown-ups on a relaxing champagne cruise. Lake Maury Resort in Fairlea. Tucked along the north shore of forest-rimmed Lake Maury in the Connecticut River Valley, this resort has been home to the Vermont Open Golf Championship for more than 50 years. Amateurs also enjoy the challenges of the meticulously maintained 6,024-yard course, where a relatively level front gives way to a rolling back nine. Not a golfer? Choose from tennis, volleyball, an indoor pool, paddling on the lake, and a 5-mile hike or bike ride around the shore. More than half of the 130 rooms and suites offer lake views, and three cottages accommodate 6 to 14 guests. Willowvale Inn and Cottages in Westmore. Lake Willoughby is the deep blue jewel of Northeast Kingdom lakes, and Willowvale is perched invitingly on its shores. Accommodations include 10 handsomely furnished inn rooms and suites, some with fireplace and jacuzzi, along with 4 lakeside and 4 lakeview cottages. Guests can use the inn's canoes, kayaks, and bikes, and the swimming beach features a water trampoline. Gill's Bar and Grill, dinner only now, overlooks the lake, and continental breakfast is included for guests. The Inn at Shelburne Farms, Shelburne. The centerpiece of this grand estate turned non-profit teaching farm is the Webb family's 19th century summer home. Now a beautiful inn with 24 guest rooms and 4 cottages set amid manicured grounds and views of Lake Champlain. The farm's own meat, produce, and award-winning cheeses are menu staples at the inn's restaurant. Cliff Haven Farm B&B in Newport Center. Set on 300 delightfully out-of-the-way acres overlooking Lake Memphremagog, the road dead-ends just ahead of the Canadian border, this 1800s farmhouse offers 4 spacious rooms, 3 with gas fireplaces. There's also a private pond for swimming. Now, North Hero House in North Hero. There's no city on North Hero's City Bay. In fact, there's little more than this cozy lakeside inn opened in 1891. But that's plenty for us. Some of the 26 rooms, spread among 4 waterside buildings, have screened-in porches and/or fireplaces. Most offer splendid lake and mountain vistas. The inn's main dining room showcases produce grown on site, and casual fare is offered in summer and on fall weekends at the bar and grill. Now, Basin Harbor, Vergennes. Family-owned for over 100 years with a prime Champlain location, this place is as timeless as a resort can be. Families return year after year for summers filled with all kinds of on-site activities. Biking, tennis, golfing, and water sports, ranging from paddleboarding to cruising in a vintage Chriscraft. Plus, it's pet-friendly. Dogs even have their own swimming beach. Best Lakeside Lodging in New Hampshire. Rocky Old Deep Haven Camps in Holderness. There's never a dull moment at this century-old Squam Lake retreat, where the days brim with hiking, yoga, kayaking, nature walks, and other screen-free diversions. Participate as a family or savor a little adult R&R by signing your kids up for age-appropriate activities, such as the Wee Campers Playgroup for ages 3 through 6, island picnics for middle schoolers, and scavenger hunts and boat trips for teens. And leave the coolers and tents at home. The cabins, cottages, and lodges come equipped with bucolic charm, and just about everything you and yours could need for a week or weekend in the woods. Pickering House Inn in Wolfboro. Wolfboro residents Peter and Patty Cook spent 2 years lovingly rehabbing the circa 1813 Yellow House, a crumbling local landmark across from Brewster Academy, thus saving it from an almost certain demolition. Restored to its former glory and renamed the Pickering House Inn, this 10-room bed and breakfast now features heated bathroom floors, frette robes, and rain showers, as well as the barn, a rustic chic event space. The Ballard House Inn in Meredith. For the record, Newton is not the official innkeeper, but the Bouncing Golden Retriever's enthusiastic welcome is certainly in line with the vibe at this beautifully restored 1784 boarding house. While owners Brian and Lynn Krauts can't take credit for the outstanding lake and mountain views from the back porch swing, they get full marks for homemade country breakfasts and complimentary coffee, wine, and beer. Located minutes from Lake Winnipesaukee, the Ballard House Inn offers 6 rooms and 2 suites, and easy access to hiking trails from the backyard. The Wolfboro Inn in Wolfboro. A short walk from the town center, the historic Wolfboro Inn, circa 1812, comes with its own private beach on Lake Winnipesaukee and a replica 19th century paddle boat called the Winnipesaukee Belle that offers seasonal daytime cruises. The inn's pub, Wolf's Tavern, serves New England comfort food alongside upscale options and has an extensive beer list. Mug Club members must sample 100 varieties, but just 2 per visit, please. Oh, and there are rooms too, 44 of them, including suites with lake views. The Manor on Golden Pond, Holderness. Perfect the way the afternoon sun strikes Isaac Van Horn's 13-acre summer estate on a hill overlooking Squam Lake. The manor basks in a golden, the same that shone in On Golden Pond, the 1981 Academy Award winner starring Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn, filmed on Squam. Inside, polished wood gleams in the distinctly uncommon common areas. Pub, library, sun-splashed dining room. Inn at Pleasant Lake in New London. Get an eyeful of the majestic peak just beyond Pleasant Lake at this inn, which marked its 150th birthday in 2018. You almost can't escape the view. 7 of the 10 homes, the patio, and the refurbished oak and grain dining room all overlook the namesake lake. After a hearty breakfast, cross a country lane to access the private community beach, where kayaks, rowboats, and canoes promise adventure. Also on offer, beach chairs. Snag one, and you and a good book can eschew activity altogether until cocktail hour. Ames Farm Inn in Guilford. Nostalgia rises like mist off the edges of Lake Winnipesaukee, where the water meets a quarter mile of sandy beach and 17 quiet cottages. Five generations of Ameses have tended this idyllic spread since 1890. The lawn would be extravagant anywhere, but on this lake, it's astounding. You scarcely need more than the inn, restaurant, dock, and mountain views. But just in case, there are movies, karaoke, and ping pong. Cabins at Lop, Stick, and Tall Timber Lodge in Pittsburgh. The Great North Woods deserves equally great pit stops. That is to say, rugged and beautiful. The lakeside cabins at these two sporting camps pull out the stops when it comes to rustic chic. Great views, grills, satellite TV. With professional guides on hand, you're never far from moose, fly fishing, paddling, or hiking. This post was first published in 2017 and has been updated. Selections originally appeared in the annual Yankee Magazine Editor's Choice Best of New England. Which lakeside lodging destinations would you add to the list? Let us know, says Yankee Magazine's editors. This reading of Yankee Magazine has been a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. That number again, 508-797-1117. Now here is the rest of today's programming on Audio Journal, beginning at 11 o'clock with Worcester Business Journal. That's followed at noon by Worcester Area News from the Telegram and Gazette. At 1 o'clock, it's Accent on Ability. Council Connection, second and third weeks. ACB reports on the fourth week of the month. At 2 o'clock, it's time for USA Today, followed by Another Point of View at 3 o'clock. Then comes Community News. First at 4 o'clock, Community News of Fitchburg and Leominster. That's followed at 5 by Community News from Southbridge, Sturbridge, and Charlton. And then Community News at 6 from Gardner. Then at 7 o'clock, it's a replay of the Telegram and Gazette News, followed at 8 o'clock by a replay of Yankee Magazine. Another Point of View follows at 9 o'clock, then USA Today and Newsmax at 11 o'clock. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Mike Krasner, and thanks very much for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. In spring, millions of small ducks move into shallow wetlands of North America. Tidal flats, sedge meadows, rice fields, sloughs, and backwaters. When these flocks of ducks erupt from a flooded field, They reveal a dark body with a blaze of green feathers in the wing. Their voices sound like crickets or tiny frogs. These are green-winged teal, North America's smallest dabbling duck. Just over a foot long and weighing less than a pound. As a dabbling duck, they feed from the water surface by sticking their heads underwater without fully submerging. Around 3 million green-winged teal breed across the northern U.S. and Canada. The male has a cinnamon brown head with a band of green behind the eye. Both males and females have a green bar on the wing that gleams like an emerald when the sun strikes it. Courtship is elaborate. Males show off with calls and displays, and up to 25 males may court a single female at once. The female selects just one of her many suitors. It's a remarkably competitive courtship ritual that plays out every year. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel.
Are you or a loved one experiencing vision loss? Unable to read your daily newspapers? Feeling isolated because of blindness? If the answer is yes, Audio Journal can help. Live broadcasts of newspapers and other local publications enable blind, visually impaired, and print-disabled residents of Worcester County to connect with their communities. Newspaper readings, informative programming, education, and entertainment return you to the printed word your vision loss has denied you. For information about Audio Journal's free service, call 508-797-1117. Again, the number is 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Or go to our website at www.audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Everyday, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is Spring, by Christina Rossetti. Frost-locked all the winter, seeds and roots and stones of fruits, what shall make their sap ascend, that they may put forth shoots? Tips of tender green, leaf or blade or sheath, telling of the hidden life that breaks forth underneath, life nursed in its grave by death. Blows the thaw wind pleasantly, drips the soaking rain. By fits, looks down the waking sun. Young grass springs on the plain. Young leaves clothe early hedgerow trees. Seeds and roots and stones of fruits, swollen with sap, put forth their shoots. Curled-headed ferns sprout in the lane. Birds sing and pair again. There is no time like spring, when life's alive in everything. Before new nestlings sing, before cleft swallows speed their journey back along the trackless track. God guides their wing, he spreads their table that they nothing lack. Before the daisy grows a common flower, before the sun has power to scorch the world up in his noontide hour. There is no time like spring that passes by. There is no life like spring life born to die, piercing the sod, clothing the uncouth clod, hatched in the nest, fledged on the windy bough, strong on the wing. There is no time like spring that passes by, now newly born and now hastening to die. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Everyday, sponsored by Audio Journal, and read by me, Nikki Whichelow. Thanks for listening, and may your life be filled with the magic of poetry.